නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Probably you can remember that we were discussing this Pura Bheda Sutta. The idea is that what needs to be done before the breakup of the body, before the death. So this question being asked by a mind-made Buddha, actually what the background is, like Buddha was delivering a series of Dhamma sermons to a large gathering of Brahmas and the Devas. So this happens only once to a particular Buddha. So for our Buddha, it has happened and information are available in the Mahasamaya Sutta. And during that gathering, certain deities, certain Devas, actually had a kind of a doubt what needs to be done before the breakage of the body. After knowing this, Buddha wanted to clarify certain things, and in order to do that, he has created a Buddha, another Buddha, it's a mind-created Buddha, and about 700 other monks, all are mind-made. And while the mind-created Buddha is asking questions, the real Buddha is answering. So this is the situation that we are come across in several suttas, like Chulavyuha, Mahavyuha, Kalahavivada, Samma Paribhajaniya Sutta, and again in this Pura Bheda Sutta. Now, Pura Bheda Sutta particularly dealing with very interesting qualities, what the Arahant has to have, and these are quite subtle qualities. Typically, we simply think the defilements are to be abandoned, but sometimes the positive side, what are the special admirable qualities that the Arahant is having, is sometimes not much paying enough attention. So this particular Sutta, Pura Bheda Sutta, touches certain amount of such very subtle, soft qualities. And so we already have discussed several verses. So let me start with where we have left, by the way. So anyway, I'll make a little summary. Katan dasi katan silo upasantoti bucchati tamme gotama pabruhi puchito uttaman nara. So that's the question asked. So what would be the proper view? What would be the proper behavior? And who is called the peaceful one? And so I am asking that from the Buddha, who is this kind of supreme person? And then Buddha start answering, Vita tanho pura bheda, pubba manta anisito, vemajje nupasankheyo, tassa natti purakkhata. Vita tanho pura bheda. So before the breakage of the body, one has to abandon all the craving. Pubbamanta anisito, so the past being abandoned, and there is no inclination or kind of dependent on the past. Vemajje nupasankheyo, even the present moment there is no any kind of grasping. Tassa natti purakkata, so with respect to the future there is no any preferences. And then akkodano asantasi avikatti akukkucho mantabhani anuddhato save vachayato muni. So basically akkodano, that's a known thing that one is completely free from anger. Asantasi, completely free from any fear. Avikatti, not boastful, not showing off, just not boasting, not exaggerating about oneself. Avikatti akukkucho, there is no any kind of regrets. So the mind is utterly peaceful. There are no regrets, no grievances. Then mantabhani, the one is with proper words, only the necessary thing is spoke after reflection. Anuddhato, not restless. So the mind is kind of even, doesn't go for any kind of a fluctuation. Free from any restlessness or any agitation. and then save vachayato muni. So he is the one who is controlled in the speech. Now we can get into the other one.
Nirasatti anagate atitang nanu sochati vivekadassi passesu ditti suchanna niyati. Nirasatti anagate,
there is no desire for the future, attachment to the future. Atitang nanu sochati, there is no any regret, sorrow over the past. Vivekadassi passesu, so this is also an interesting part. We discussed this in detail last time. So how one is maintaining seclusion amidst different contacts. He is actually living the typical life like a typical human being, with eyes open, ears available, nose, tongue, body, mind available, all the sense objects are capable of coming in or going through any kind of an impingement. So senses are fully operative, but still maintaining a kind of a seclusion from this all contact. So that's a beautiful part. We can say it is the result of the proper practice, particularly the result of the proper vipassana practice. So we discussed that in length based on the certain parts taken from Kalakarama Sutta, how one is not making any kind of a manyana, any kind of conceiving with respect to what he has seen, and not making any kind of a conceiving with respect to what not seen, and again thinking that something is worth seeing, and again the other part is not making any self who is going through this experience. There is no such so-called experiencer or seer, does not make any kind of a conceiving out of that. So likewise with respect to the sense impingement, so one can maintain that viveka, that seclusion. So one is maintaining this just kind of a ditte ditta mattam, sute sutta mattam, mute muta mattam, vinyate vinyata mattam. When seeing happens, it's a mere seeing. When hearing happens, it's a mere hearing. When smelling, tasting, touching happens, it's mere type of experience. And when there are thoughts coming or any kind of ideas coming to the mind, it is mere experience, mere cognition. There is no a so-called thinker or cognizer as such, but the experience is going on. This is in a way pretty difficult to understand logically, or probably you have to refer the teachings of the Buddha, particularly on the anatta, then one would be able to understand how things are happening still without a self. These are pretty interesting areas of deep vipassana. So as one is continuing one's practice, how one is capable of going through certain experience without attaching to it, without grasping it, and without making any self, without making any I, sense of I. So this is what we discussed last week. And now we can go to the today's new verse. Patilino akuhako apihalu amachari appagabbo ajeguccho pesu neyecha noyuto. Actually certain terms in these verses are very according to the scholars, these words are very old type of Pali and not quite often used, but we can particularly say these are the early Buddhist teachings, particularly the suttas available in the Sutta Nipata, that is the Kuddaka Nikaya Sutta Nipata. Those teachings are very very authentic type of teachings which are belong to the early Buddhist teachings. So particularly when the Buddha has enlightened, and then in his early 20 years of his enlightenment, so he has directly spoke to the person, and he was interested in understanding the teaching, and he's also really a potential guy. And basically there is no any sort of in-between attainments. Mostly they quickly get into the arahantship. So therefore if you refer suttas in the Sutta Nipata, there is no words about Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami. What is available mostly are about the arahantship. So the people encounter the Buddha are quite, we can say, really a meritorious people, or really ones with lot of potential. So therefore, they were able to understand the Buddha's teaching even when it is recited very concise way. And you can see these verses are very concise. And we can see again the other hand, the audience is also not human now. Here these verses are uttered to the non-human audience, Devas and the Brahmas. And we heard that they are with very quick wit and they can easily understand some deep teachings. And therefore, explaining things very concisely is one another prominent feature in these verses. Now, patilino, withdrawn from all the defilements. Patilino. Now, so basically, being with defilements and engrossed with defilements is a typical nature of the mind. So you are basically working, but there's a significant influence coming from the defilements. Defilements are the ones very much like covering the mind. But once defilements are abandoned, one can say it's completely freedom is there, complete purity is there. So the mind remains utterly calm. So one has completely withdrawn from the defilements. So we don't need to explain all the defilements, but we can understand basically the original nature of the mind is now very much available, free from any defilements. There is no any coloring, there is no any conditioning to the mind. There are no, say from simple terms, there are no hindrances to the mind. It's utterly free, completely liberated. So defilements are the typical causes coming and pollute the mind, and we can't say it is also coming from outside, rather because of our asavas and anusayas, that means the influxes and the latent tendencies. So the mind has the potential to act differently or quickly become impure, quickly get defiled. So because there's a huge potential available in the mind, which is very much like kind of a dirt in the latent state. Once the senses are stimulated, so this latent defilements get activated, they come to the surface and pollute the mind. So this kind of operation we can imagine. But when the Arahant is there, so he was able to uproot all the defilements, including the influxes, including the latent tendencies. Even though he may go through certain, say, kind of difficult situation in his life, but there is no any kind of defilements going to be going to go through. Mind is utterly purified. Akuhaku. It's not a skimmer. Now this is an interesting part. So how one is trying to convince someone in a wrong way. So kuhaka is the typical term, that means the defiled term. Kuhaka, one which is trying to deceive the others by making some secret plans. So that is the kuhaka. Kind of a schemer. So there are three typical scheming mentioned in the commentary. These are entirely related to the monks, by the way. So you know that the commentary is made particularly emphasizing the monks' order, monks' life. So the examples given are also related to the monks' life. So there are three means of scheming that consisting in the use of requisites, consisting in the postures, and that consisting in insinuating talk. Now requisites. Now the idea is, now say for example a particular monk is now going for Pindapatha and certain people want to offer some food. Now he, with some ulterior motive, he sometimes refuses it and only takes very, very little. giving the impression that he is one with very frugal qualities. He is one with appichata. He has less desires. But actually, he doesn't have such a less desires. He is not an appicca. But he has a lot of desires, but he want to impress the people. In order to impress the people, he acquire or he receive only a little, he accept only a little, and giving some impression to the others, oh, this is really a impressive monk, he is really a frugal monk. And then they start giving some more, because people want merit, and they are in search of some good monks, monks with good behavior, monks with austere qualities. And so people get impressed and they start giving more and more. And that was his plan, actually. That was his secret plan. Now say, for example, another person, say a certain person want to give a robe. And he simply say, okay, I have a robe and I have received this and I don't need it. So it is, if it is really not necessary, telling so is all right. That is all right and that is accepted. But here the point is not that. While he is intent to have more, he is telling, okay, I don't need. I am going to take only a little. So the intention is quite different, but showing something completely different behavior. So that is the scheming with respect to the requisites. Maybe even someone wants to build a kuti or kind of a lodging place, he still insists that I don't need this, so I don't need that, something like that. But then people get more and more impressed and they make the best. But typically if someone's a particular monk say, okay, I better like have this kind of facility, so people might get disappointed also, why this monk is asking so much of luxurious items. But actually this monk is asking luxurious items, but in a different way. So that is the scheming with respect to the this requisite. The other one is with respect to the postures. That means how he is behaving, how he is showing himself, so that others get impressed. Say for example, one is trying to impress the others, telling or showing that one is with good behavior, with very refined sila. What he does is, while walking, he walks in a very pleasant way, in a very decent way. While wearing the robes, he is walking or wearing it very decently. And while talking also, he is talking in a very polite way. So that he actually, internally, he doesn't have such kind of a polite nature. But he wants to impress the others. He knows how to impress the people. He knows how to attract the people. So what he is doing, he is using his postures, how he is behaving, how he is maintaining his manners. So all these are very much like intended to impress others and so that get more and more requisites. So that's the idea. And then consisting of insinuating talk. So he is talking to the others by giving some indications that he is more and more noble and he may be an arahant. But giving a, not directly telling I am an arahant, but rather differently indicating to impress the others. And probably if he wants something to the monastery or to the temple, and again he can use some different way so that others start supporting, but without honestly asking, but rather from a cunning way to indicate them that this thing and that thing are quite necessary. So likewise, this sort of a behavior is quite cunning, or it is not the proper truthful type of behavior. So Buddha abandoned it, Buddha discouraged it, and he basically condemned it. But certain monks can show it. So that, but the arahant on the other hand is not a schemer. So he is showing his true behavior. Probably you can remember certain opposite type of situations where they are even in the commentary. For example, I heard while one of the kings are in search of arahants, I think King Saddath is in Sri Lanka, so he get to know a particular monk is an arahant. And typically what he does is, once he get to know that a particular monk is an arahant, So he comes to visit that Arahant with his army, his retinue, and then he make lot of donations to the monastery, to the temple, and he make the monastery, the temple, a Rajamahavihara, what we call a privileged type of monastery, which has the king's support. So there are such many viharas, temples, monasteries, where directly the king is supporting. In order to do that, the king has to appreciate the monk, so recognize the monk as an arahant or very extraordinary type of a person. So this particular king, maybe King Saddhatissa, get to know that this monk is actually an arahant. So he want to visit the monk. Interestingly, this monk has the opposite behavior. He doesn't want to get popular. He doesn't want to get recognized as an arahant, even though he is a real arahant. So what he did is, when king is approaching the temple, he removed the robe, and just with the under robe, he was just doing some sort of a scratching on the ground, so that the king and the others who see him get kind of disappointed, thinking that he is not an arahant, and their imagination or their sort of understanding is entirely wrong. So he was able to give that feeling to the king and the others, so they left, because he didn't really want to show off, or he didn't really want to become popular. So instead, what he did was to distract them, so he simply behaved differently. So ultimately, what happened, one of his students actually came and mentioned, so why did you do like this? So if the king would support us, so we can build a monastery, or we can become really popular and all that, this and... So the monk, this student is quite interested of having gains and popularity, but the arahant is not. But anyway, the arahant has another idea. So before the death, he make a kind of a decision or kind of a determination, till the king comes, so this body should not get burnt. Do the funeral time, even though others would try to burn it, so it may not get cremated till the king come. So he made such a kind of a determination before the death, his final passing away. So it has happened like that. So the news went around, and it came to the king also, and ultimately king came, and ultimately things have happened immediately. So likewise, some interesting incidents are reported in the commentary, how the real arahants are very much like hiding their qualities. So they are not a skimmer at all. So they don't want to show off at all. They don't want to attract the others at all. And again, they don't want to become popular at all. Rather, they simply want to hide themselves. So that's the typical behavior explained in the Dhamma. So what we call as the Adhigama Appichata. So with respect to the attainments, they are not showing it. They are not very much like indicating it, so that others get impressed and start giving this and that. Rather, they want to live a very simple life without being popular. So that's the typical real good nature of the arahant. So we can understand that the term akuhako, that he's behaving like that. And then apihalu. So without craving, that's actually we can understand easily. So he is completely free from craving. Apihalu. Then amachari. Doesn't have any miserliness. So he can share anything with the others. So with respect to the monk's life, there may be certain requisites that the others are also interested, and the monk can share it with the other companions without any trouble. Now typically what happens is, even though the monks, when they are ordaining, they are able to relinquish many things, there could be a little situation where after one becomes a monk, he might get attached to certain things. Say for example, dwellings. Suppose he is having, this monk is having a temple or a dwelling place, a hut, a kuti, but he is so attracted to it, and even if a guest monk comes, he doesn't want to leave it or give it or share it. He is so much attached to that kuti. He doesn't want to change the kuti. Even when someone is asking, okay, you better leave this, so they want to give a different thing, or someone comes and want to share it, but he doesn't want to. He's so much of attached to that dwelling place. So that is one issue the monks can have. Even though they were able to relinquish many typical lay life related requisites, once they become a monk, they can get attracted to so many monk's life related requisites, and that can become a kind of a strong attachment. So here, with respect to dwellings, therefore one should not become miserly. One should be able to either relinquish it at any time or share it with another one. So that type of a flexibility, that kind of a sharing attitude, not owning things, rather understanding this is merely used for certain purpose, is very, very important. So that's why typically Buddha, with respect to this dwellings, Buddha particularly mentioned, you have to reflect while you are using a dwelling place. Patisankha yoniso senasanam patisevami. So while reflecting wisely, I am using the dwelling place. It is not for any kind of attraction or any kind of showing off. Rather, it is for mere usage to protect the body from the wind, from the sun, from the cold, from the heat, from the serpents, and ultimately to use it for meditation. So that is why this dwelling place is meant. So typically it is asked from the monks to often reflect what is the purpose of using a dwelling place, what you call the pratyaveksha. So such pratyaveksha, such reflection would be quite helpful to to abandon the attachment, to abandon the any kind of say conceit if one is having with respect to the dwelling place, any kind of a miserliness with respect to the dwelling place. The other thing is with the families. Now this is also a very interesting part. Now when we consider the monkshood, so there may be his supporters. Now say for example, a certain monk has his own supporters. Not immediately, but slowly. Say he start preaching, he start say a teaching, and then there are certain families get attracted to him, and so they start supporting. Now he consider these families are belong to him now. So these are my supporting families. But unfortunately, there could be a situation, another monk also want to take some help from those families. But this particular monk, I mean the previous monk, does not like it. Because he considered that those families are my families, my supporters, and others should not intervene, others should not expose them, others should not ask any support from them. I am not ready to share my supporters with the other monks. So this is the wrong attitude certain monks can have. So this is what we call the kulamacharya. So first one is called avasamacharya with respect to the dwelling place. Now this is called kulamacharya with respect to one's supporters. So one doesn't want to share those supporters with the other monks. He does want to have them only for himself without exposing them to the others. And then about the gains, maybe he is having a lot of requisites, others are supporting him well. With respect to the dwelling place or any other kind of offerings. So he keep collecting them without sharing them. So it's also possible. So when one becomes popular or when one becomes an elderly monk, so the householders come and offer various things. So typically, the typical nature is that the senior monk or whoever receiving is ready to share with the other fellow monks. That's a typical behavior, correct behavior. But there may be a macharya, there could be a miserliness with respect to such gains. whenever, even though you gain a lot of things, you are not ready to share. Actually, these are fairly common to the lay people also. Even though the explanations were given particularly to the monks, but this miserliness is common among the householders as well. You are not ready to share your dwellings, you are not ready to share your friends or families, supporters. You don't want your friend to be talking to another person, because you want to own him, you want to particularly, personally have his assistance, but not the others. So likewise, very kind of a very personal, very private, very limited kind of a mentality, where so my supporters should restrict to myself. They should not support the others. So that is why sometimes when you are going to establish a monastery or new temple, there may be certain resistance coming from the surrounding monasteries. So they feel that it is a kind of a threat. Because other monks may come and they establish there and they impress the supporters, and slowly my supporters will be withdrawn. So I become helpless. I become less supportive. So that is some sort of a behavior monks can have. But for the Arahant, all this miserliness is abandoned. And with respect to praise, now one is with some amount of praise, one has some reputation, but he doesn't want to share that reputation with others. That's another very subtle type of miserliness one can have, because one can become very popular and one become a good teacher or preacher or meditator, or so one is getting more and more supported by the others. And now slowly a certain reputation being built up. But there may be other monks who are maybe students who are now coming to you and get the support because of you. But this particular monk doesn't want to share it. So this is the type of miserliness talking here. And with respect to the Dhamma, so this is of course where one doesn't want to share one's knowledge. A particular monk is very well educated, well learned, but he wants to keep that knowledge to himself without sharing with the others. So this is another type of miserliness. Now we can see the miserliness can happen not only for the monks, even to the, I mean, it's quite common in the lay people. But as one is progressing, so this miserliness has to be abandoned. One should be generous instead. One should be ready to share things. So, and again, with respect to that akukkacho, akuhako, that means not a schemer. So this is actually common in the lay life also. One should be truthful, one should show the true behavior, rather than having one ulterior motive and deceive the others, cheat the others. If one is open-minded and simply show one's true behavior, at least to the Kalyanamittas, at least to the, say, good people, then you are very much like open-minded. You are not having some secret type of a life. Rather, you are quite open and you can share anything with others and there are no secrets. And then another one, Amachari, Appagabbu. Probably you can remember this term appagabbu, available in the Karaniya Metta Sutta, where one has some courteous behavior. So bodily so he is completely free from any impudence. Bodily impudence, verbal impudence and mental impudence, he is completely free. So for example, bodily impudence. Now with respect to the monk's life, typically, the younger monks have to respect the elder monks. The one with the impudence, bodily impudence, he doesn't care about it. He simply neglect it, ignore it. He may ignore the elder monks, he ignore the hierarchy. He misbehave in front of the, elder monks. Ignore the elder monks, doesn't listen to elder monks. And so likewise, there may be a situation. One is
having this kind of behavior, not a very humble type of behavior, but the very conceited, ignorant and misbehavior. But the appagabbo means the opposite. He's showing his true, proper, correct behavior. Assume that you are a young monk, you are the young person, and with, in front of the, say, another elder, another good person, a worthy person, so you become a humble person and you give the due respect. You salute him, you give that proper respect to the other person, and not being arrogant, rather you use the bodily behavior properly. Maybe you are attending to him, helping him, maybe say washing the feet, washing the ball, and give the first seat. So likewise, with respect to the typical respects that one is doing to a worthy person, a respectful person, is something that indicated here. So one has such proper behavior. It is not mere manners here, but rather internally one is maintaining some proper behavior. And it is not also kind of a with some hidden agenda, ulterior motive, rather genuinely one is doing it. And then verbal impudence, where when someone, suppose that elder monks are talking and the younger monk interrupt their discussion. So that is where the verbal impudence. But the proper behavior is that one is waiting for one's chance. So rather than disturbing the others, elders, so one has the patience to wait. One knows the manners, how to participate in a proper discussion, and how one has to speak, and maybe using some polite words without using any harsh words, and giving the due respect to the elders. So likewise, the proper speech is also matters here. So this appagabbo, the one who is courteous, so he has that manners in a proper legal or proper orderly type of manner, which is acceptable, praiseworthy by the elders, by the good people. And then the mental impudence, where one doesn't maintain any kind of a very hard, tensed, considered type of mentality. One has the flexibility. One is quite humble, and in front of particularly the elder monks, one's showing his humble nature. So this is the type of behavior that mentioned by the appagabbo. So now one's properly courteous. And then ajeguju means not morally repulsive. That means actually he is quite morally respectful. He is maintaining his moral behavior properly, and he is not a dusseela. He is with a suseela. He is with the proper seela. He is with the proper moral conduct. So we can see certain qualities. Patilino means that withdrawn from any defilements. Now he is quite pure. Akuhako, he doesn't show any scheming, any cheating, any deceiving type of behavior. Rather, he is showing the true nature, correct nature. Apihalu, free from craving. Amachari, free from the miserliness. And appagabbo, when dealing with the others, he is showing this correct behavior, giving due respect to the elders, giving due respect to the worthy people, and not being showing any arrogance, rather very humble, proper behavior, honestly. And it's also not sort of in a cheating way, rather honestly one's now having such qualities. And ajeguju, and one is doesn't have any wrong behavior with respect to the morality. So the point is that certain monks, without being moral, they show that they are really a moral, virtuous kind of a monk. So they are like thieves in a way. So that's why certain areas are there where they become repulsive with respect to the morality. So even though the morality is explained by this Buddha, the sila is explained by the Buddha, so being immoral, one is showing like a moral person. So this is quite repulsive. So the people, if once the people get to know, so he is just a cheater, a deceiver, so his behavior being very much like become very repulsive. So that's the idea. So there are such morality related behaviors. So even though one is not really moral, one can show a wrong indication. Or else one is directly breaking the precepts so that one become completely immoral. That is also being condemned by the wise people, because you are supposed to be moral, you are maintaining the moral standards, you are maintaining good sila, so that is the proper behavior. But one is not behaving like that, instead one is behaving the opposite. So the others start making one repulsive, one ignoring that person and neglecting that person and very much like condemning his behavior, because his behavior is not correct. But this Ajay Gujjo means that he is not repulsive, morally repulsive. He is maintaining the proper sila. Pesu neyecha no yuto. That is quite obvious that he is not intending to slander. Rather, he is a person who is according the others, so who make the accordance with the others. He likes to maintain the peace among the others rather than trying to divide the others. Now you can see, I mean, typically we are interested of vipassana. So you may be here gathered to understand the vipassana meditation. But you can see what a kind of a emphasis Buddha has given to the social perspective. So even though the arahant is a pure person, what a kind of a behavior that he is showing, that what the Buddha is expected from him. So these are very subtle qualities, very much like embedded in the arahant. So as one is abandoning the defilements, so he is endowed with the proper behavior. He is endowed with the correct behavior. He is not speaking in a divisive way, so that the fractions are being made. Rather, he properly try to make accordance with the others. So the peace is maintained, maybe among a group, among a nation, among various parts. So he's a kind of a peacemaker in that sense. And his sila is very pure, he's maintaining proper sila. And then appagabbo, he properly behave in front of the elders, in front of the worthy other people, and not having bad behavior. And doesn't have any miserliness, no defilements and no any craving. And there are certain amount of overlappings, but when we can see a kind of a big picture, we can see even with respect to lust, attraction, miserliness, craving, lobha, tanha, all are certainly certain amount of similarities are there, but we can understand the differences also. So what's the difference between craving and the miserliness? So that we need to understand, are we able to see any miserliness within ourselves? So that's why we have to understand this little deeply. So now you have done a fair amount of vipassana, and as a result of that, you may be in the phase of abandoning the defilements. So in order to do that, one has to understand the behavior of a defilement, the influence of the defilement. Say for example, you are having your vehicle. Say you are going to a particular place. Do you like to share it with another person? Do you like to share it with another passenger? Say someone is simply waving you, asking your help. Are you simply ignoring him, or are you going to help him? So your resources, are you ready to share with the others? Is your wealth, are you ready to share? So likewise, doesn't matter either you are a layperson or a monk, I mean, we need to ask, so what are the real qualities currently operating in my mind? Are they indicating certain defiled behavior, or am I having the proper behavior? Am I ready to share things? Am I ready to generously offer something? I am showing my true nature, not behaving in a deceit, kind of deceived, cheating manner. So likewise, we have to have a very honest reflection, very humble reflection about ourselves, then only we can understand the operation of these subtle defilements. Then we will get into the next verse. Satyesu anasavi atimane cha no yuto sanho cha patibhanava na saddho na virajyati. Satyesu anasavi, not swept up by enjoyments. Atimane cha no yuto, and not swollen with arrogance. Sanho cha patibhanava, gifted with ingenuity. Na saddho na virajyati, not credulous, not growing of dispassionate. Now the qualities explained here in this verse are also very subtle. Satyesu anasavi. So basically, we all have certain type of ways to enjoy ourselves. Maybe you are a lover with films or gardens or say various other artwork or something like that, just to gratify the eye sense. So similarly, there are beautiful sounds, music, etc. So you may be a music lover. There may be orders, you may be going through to various places asking the best kind of perfume, so you may be into that. On the other hand, you may have a desire to visit the best type of delicacies, to visit the best kind of hotels, so that sure your that need, the taste need is fulfilled. On the other hand, you may be going from one person to the other person just gratifying the body. So likewise, the panchakama, these fivefold sense desires, sensual objects, are typically that we all like, we all use them for enjoyment. Sometimes things are not really necessary, but being used for enjoyment. If we are using, say, food for to mere abandon or lay hunger, that's all right, that's accepted. But are you eating for enjoyment? Are you adorning yourself for enjoyment? Are you looking at things for enjoyment? So typically that is the nature. So for example, all dramas, all music, all different kinds of pictures, maybe films, this and that, all are for enjoyment. So people love that, we like it, we spend a lot of money on that. So for this enjoyment. Now the point mentioned here is Satyesu anasavi. So this arahant is not swept away by enjoyments. So his mind is not indulging in any of them. On the other hand, his mind is completely free, or you can say not being driven by these enjoyments. His mind is capable of maintaining its clarity, maintaining its dignity, maybe able to maintain its purity. Even though the enjoyable objects are there in the outside, his mind still has the clarity maintained. Mind still have the equanimity maintained. So that is very difficult actually, because people are attracted to the enjoyments, all these sensual impingements, once they are particularly giving you a lot of satisfaction. So you're being attracted, you become even a slave of that. But the arahant, on the other hand, even amidst all these enjoyments are available outside, inviting you to participate, but he is maintaining his dignity, we can say. He is maintaining his clarity. He is maintaining his serenity. Atimane cha no yuto. And he is not with arrogance. He is not with conceit. Now, typically, this is a very common defilement operating in our mind. Even though you are a Dhamma follower, even though you are a person with lot of knowledge, still you can be very arrogant, you can be with lot of conceit, even because your knowledge, because of your knowledge, your learnedness, or even with, because of your sila, even your morality, even with your meditation. So all our skills can cause conceit in our mind. And so this is a very subtle defilement again. So you can't sometimes even understand how it is operating in the mind. You may be behaving in a different way with the others, but they sometimes may indicate, oh, you are a conceited guy. You are quite proud. You are arrogant. So all that are sometimes missed by us. So be being a victim of that conceit. Atimane cha no yuto basically means that this arahant is not completely free from conceit. You know that one can even misunderstand one's achievement or attainment, thinking he is an arahant or anagami, sakadagami, sotapanna, because of the conceit. That's a very common fact. Even in the Parajikas, Buddha mentioned, even though one is, if one is saying that I am an arahant because of his misunderstanding, because of the adhimana, that high-mindedness, so then it is not typically considered as the parajika, because he doesn't have intention to cheat the others, but he misunderstood by his overestimation. One can become overestimating oneself. So the atimana can be a very influencing factor for that overestimation, because you think about yourself as a really a exceptional person, extraordinary type of skilled person, even though you are a typical person, but you can overestimate yourself. And the point is that you can even then declare you as an arahant, or I am the best person, I am the king, or this or that, but because of this overestimation. But the arahant, on the other hand, is completely free from the conceit. Sanhocha patibahanava. Now this patibahana is another very interesting part. So there are people who are actually with very subtle, very good skills. And you being even inventive of new things, and you are resourceful. And in the commentary, there are three areas highlighted here. One with ingenuity in learning. That means you are quite skilled in learning, and you can quickly learn things, you can quickly remember things, memorize things, so you can quickly answer the questions. Quite capable of understanding the Buddha's teaching very quickly. So this is a very interesting skill, actually, maybe very useful in one sense, to understand the Dhamma quickly and then to realize it quickly. And again, another extraordinary skill to explain it to the others, convince the others. So likewise, this patibhana, so this kind of ingenuity, is a very very impressed quality that a person can have. So he has his quick wit, he quickly understands things, and that is related to learning. And in questioning, so sometimes people are asking various questions, and the person with this patibhana, he quickly answers them properly with proper wisdom, maybe even giving proper references. And even though the questions are quite deep or difficult, still he is capable of understanding the depth, answering it properly. So this patibhana is therefore a very, very interesting skill that the Buddha admired, and certain arahants are exceptional in that. And even the achieving, so the realization, the being realized in the Buddha's teaching, or attaining the sotapanna, sakadagami, anagami, arahant. So all that are a kind of a extraordinary skill that one is having. So certain people are quite gifted in that. So they have that type of a skill, patibhana. So there are, you probably have heard about that certain arahants are endowed with such quality. Atta dhamma nirutti patibhana. Atta dhamma nirutti patibhana. Typically called as there's a beautiful term. I'll remember that later. So atta dhamma nirutti patibhana. The patibhana is the one highlighted here. So such a very special skill one can have. And sanhocha patibhanava, that means that you are inventive, you are resourceful, and that skill is available with that particular arahant. And then na saddho. Now this saddho and the typical proper saddha is quite different. Now here the term saddha is meant from a different perspective. So typically what happens is that when even though one is faithful, one is with saddha, it can shift to someone else. Say for example, you are a Buddhist, but due to certain reasons you can quickly shift your attention, quickly shift your faith to someone, some other faith. You start following another teacher, you start following another say religious teacher, you lost the previous. So people therefore can jump from one faith to another faith. They can go for selection to different faiths, because now different faiths are available. And sometimes they easily get attracted without going deep analysis. Say someone is preaching very beautifully and you get quickly attracted to him, think that he is the best teacher and he is the arahant, he is a very good meditator. So likewise, with few words, with few teachings, that you sometimes come to wrong judgments. So that is a little mistake in the faith character, saddha charita, where with little things he get quickly jump to a conclusion and quickly get impressed. That's a little nature in the saddha charita. If you are with lot of faith, easily you can get very much like cheated or deceived, because you are not going from deep analysis. Simply from the superficial outlook, you come to a quick decision. But here nasaddho means the arahant is not like that. He actually has his own experiential knowledge. He is not being faithful for mere superficial faith. Whatever Buddha has mentioned is now experienced by him. Probably you can remember one instance where the Venerable Sariputta being questioned, are you in faith of the Buddha? I can't remember the exact term. Are you faithful, having saddha for the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, in a particular, maybe a superficial way? And Venerable Sariputta say, no, I don't have such saddha, because I have experienced it. I know it for myself. I have thoroughly practiced it. Now I am having faith towards the Buddha, not kind of superficial way, but I have experienced certain part what Buddha has experienced, what he has preached, being realized by me. So likewise, this is a very very deep conviction one can have. So therefore, it is not the superficial type of saddha that the arahant is having. And na virajyati. Now here, arahant is the one who has completely abandoned the defilements. Now he doesn't want to have further dispassion, because he's already abandoned all the defilements. But the other trainees develop in the dispassion. Say for example, the Sotapanna still developing the dispassion. Sakadagami is still developing the dispassion. Anagami is still developing the dispassion. But the Arahant is the one with completed state. He has no craving at all. Now he doesn't have to develop dispassion because there is no passion at all. So the idea is very subtle. So the verse, we need to go a little deep. Then only we can understand the verse. So why the Arahant doesn't have dispassion, while the other trainees still have dispassion or to develop the dispassion? The other trainees still have to develop dispassion because fair amount of passion or lust or desires are still available in their mind. But the Arahants have completely abandoned all the desires. Now there is no need of developing dispassion further. He has completed. He has done the task. He has done the job. So this verse also having such interesting points highlighted. Satyesu anassavi, so you are not swept by enjoyments. You know how to handle your surrounding. You know how to go through it. You know how to tackle the sense impingements or your sense objects. Atimanejanoyato, you are not going to any arrogant behavior or any conceited behavior. Sanhocha patibhanava, one is gifted with ingenuity. Na saddho, not credulous, and you are going deep and touching the things yourself, realizing things directly. Na virajyati, no need of further developing dispassion because your defilements are totally abandoned. Now these are the two verses I like to discuss today, and with that I will stop the Dhamma Sutta teaching today. And if you have any questions now, you can ask.
Sadhu. I don't see anybody raise their hand. Oh, there is one. Chandima. So I'll let you ask the question. You can unmute and ask your question.
Most respected Bhante.
Yes.
How first are you? Of all, much merit for teaching very interesting, valuable sutta today also.
Yeah.
I wish to get some clarification on my current state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Last few days, I am always experiencing sound of silence.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rahayogagano.
Yes, yes.
Not only in the meditation time, but also in daily life also. Now I am experiencing this.
Yeah, just leave it. Just enjoy it. So you don't need external.
Okay?
No, you don't need external music now. Now the music is auto-generated.
Yeah, it's always with me now.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's why I just.
No. Just be with it. If you consider it as a burden, or if you consider it as a hindrance or a disturbance, then it becomes a disturbance. But just let it be.
No, I didn't see
that. Yeah, just let it be. It can be a very natural thing. It indicates that inner silence,
yeah.
Basically. So mind is in a kind of a silence. So by that time, you feel that deep kind of inner noise, what we call the sound of silence. Let it be. That is, you can take it as a little blessing. Just leave it aside. Just enjoy the inner silence, by the way.
Always coming in.
Sure.
I don't know.
No, let it
it's
be.
It's a new experience now.
Yeah, just enjoy the inner silence more and more. By the way, it will sometimes disappear, but sometimes reappear. It depends. Actually, I think it is happening because of certain attunement happening within ourselves. But it not happens every time, but it can happen sometimes. It now has happened to you, yep. let it be and just enjoy. And just continue your daily activities as usual. And one day this can disappear. And then you can see again kind of a complete silence.
Yeah, last 5 days, continuously I experienced this.
Mm-hmm.
During the meditation time as well as when working with other things also.
Uh-huh.
But
so how,
my mind
by
is
the
very
way,
peaceful.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I'm not taking it as a trouble.
Good.
But I thought to get advice one thing.
Yeah. It's all right. This is a very common thing. actually commonly discussed among the meditation circles, and particularly Venerable Ajahn Sumedho, he even published a book on this, and Ajahn Amaro even published a book on this. Probably you can read that in our website. It is translated into Sinhala. Atulatata Samandhima. Atulatata Samandhima is the translation for Ajahn Amaro's book. I think Inner Silence or Inner Sound, I can't, Sound of Silence, or rather, I can't remember the name that he has given to his book. But Atulatata Samandhima is the book translated by Rani Manu, Rani Rajapaksha, and it's available in our website in Sinhala. Quite commonly discussed this. Yeah, this fact is commonly discussed, so we need to take it as a kind of a gift.
When doing the walking meditation also, it's appearing.
Yeah.
And the sitting time also same.
Right.
Then we can stay with that, no?
Let yeah, yeah. Just leave it aside. Just let it be.
Okay, Bhante.
Yeah.
Much merit, Bhante. Yeah. Therwan Saranai.
Yeah. Therwan Saranai.
Very good. So, Bhante, I think I have a couple of questions. I can't see any hands are raised. For today's teaching, there were a few of the new words that I just picked it up and jot it down as well.
Yeah.
And
actually, I forgot to mention that name. Atta Dhamma Nirutti Patibhana, and Lakmal gave the correct name. In Sinhala, it is called Siu Pilisimbiya. I can't remember the Pali term. In Sinhala, it is called Siu Pilisimbiya, and it's correct. Thank you, Lakmal.
Okay.
Yeah. There's one hand raised. There's one hand raised.
Yes. Okay, Mahesha.
Yeah.
So I'll let Mahesha to ask the question then.
Yeah.
Thank you, but this is not a question, just something that related to the talk that we had today. So it said about Patibhana, which is like, you know, looking at someone's skill or the superiorness because of the ability to understand the Dhamma and then preach Dhamma and then
I now remember
others.
I now remember the Pali term, it's called Patisambhida, the four Patisambhida, Atta Dhamma Nirutti Patibhana. So Patibhana is the one highlighted in the verse. Typically there are four: Atta Dhamma Nirutti Patibhana.
Atta Dhamma Nirutti
Patibhana.
Patibhana is the last one.
Patibhana is the last one, yeah.
So there are four things, isn't it?
Yeah, there are four things. Atta is the way, as I am giving a rough explanation here, I also can't remember exact explanation. Atta is very much, you know, the exact meanings of the thing. Dhamma is there.
Artha,
yeah.
In other words, like in Sinhala, we
correct.
Call
Artha. Artha, yeah. And the Dhamma is, you are giving the reasons, more deep causes for that. So many things. Nirutti, where you know the grammar, their proper explanation, the grammatical, linguistic type of thing. And then the Patibhana is where you are endowed with some extraordinary skills, as we discussed today. So certain monks, certain people are exceptionally good in certain inventive type of characteristics. Say you have the very quick understanding, you are very quick in explaining things, you are quick, very good in answering questions, you can abandon someone else's doubts. So likewise, the Patibhana is something, extraordinary skills are there. Now here we are talking particularly to the Dhamma. With respect to the Dhamma.
Yeah, I understand that. That's what the whole, half of the discussion was on.
Correct. Yeah.
So when we get in back to the, like, the, so that's the version of, when you're starting the talk, you said that this is like more related to the the Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
But when we apply the similar situation, even though it's not the exact one, to the lay life,
yeah.
Some people are good at certain things that they actually improve their skills at. I mean, for example, like in their related professions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually make the ladder of like superior, inferior thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, someone is good at something, so that person getting positions higher and higher, and then that person is regarded and, you know, respected in that particular profession.
Correct.
So same thing like, similar thing like applying in with Sangha, that's what I understood from today's talk.
Correct, correct.
This is actually something that was running in my mind for, you know, I was a child, even I was thinking like why the Sangya Vahanse is actually, when coming to a house for a dana or pirit or something, they come in a particular order.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that then later on when I was a youth, I realized that it's because of the number of years of
high ordination, upasampada.
Upasampada years counts for them to be at the first or the last.
Yeah.
And then I question, now this question actually came to my mind like some time back, so, but it came up now again because of this discussion. So then I know that Buddha was saying that people are having different abilities, but he pretty much treated everyone like equally.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if I'm wrong. This is what mm-hmm. This is what I having in mind.
Correct.
So he pretty much treated everyone equal as much as he can.
Mm.
But I feel like it's the culture that Buddhist traditions are cultures, not that the Buddha, what Buddha said
mm-hmm.
to do,
mm-hmm.
Walking in that particular order, going to somewhere in that particular order, and then kind of respecting, because I know in my personality, I don't like that, you know, forget about the Sangha, I'm not talking about Sangha, but lay life, we treated some people superior, inferior, like that bar is there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, especially when we go to Sri Lanka, I actually feel very sad most of the time when I'm dealing with people, because people used to call some people just, even not with a name, like, different, you know, terms. Mm-hmm. I don't want to use it here.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, they say, sir, madam, all sorts of, you know, extra extra names into their you know, titles.
Mm-hmm.
And not the exact name, whereas where I'm living, it's just the name. Whether you, whoever you are, whatever your profession you are in, you are called from your first name.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I really like, because that shows that, okay, whoever you're coming from, where you're coming from, where you live, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
For this case, you're just A, B, C, D, or whatever, your
mm-hmm.
name.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't count the other things behind your name
mm-hmm.
or other things you're carrying in your head,
mm-hmm.
which is I quite like, because that's actually the Dharma concept as well, as the Buddha said, that people are equal.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at the minds of people are equal, but you pollute your mind, then you're getting higher or lower,
mm-hmm.
depending on what you put inside your mind, inside your head,
mm-hmm.
and then that reflecting from your actions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the mindset that I was having since I was a child. And then this actually, today's talk actually brought all those, my thoughts again back to my mind. Okay, I was right? We don't have to, you know, think about, you know, being superior, inferior, whatever. We treat everyone with respect, whereas they're all born as humans because they have a mind that they can develop and improve and get free from all these defilements at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone is in the same pace, therefore.
Mm.
So that's what just I want to clarify, whether my mindset about this, thinking like this, is correct. Because each time when I see, even for example, I mean, I'm taking too long, but excuse me for that. When I went to the Nisaranavanaya for my first retreat there, and you know, I had a picture good impression. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad, but very, very high impression on Buddhist traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Sangha was really up to what I was expecting, but you know, the retreat, the lay people who coordinated, nothing happened to me actually, but I saw like they treated some people very, very unacceptable way, mm-hmm. even the speech.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunities, like, you know, they were not having proper, I mean, they requested, actually, they were requesting, that is also not a good thing, like, they request, I want this, I want that, I want that. But when we go to a retreat, actually, we leave everything behind and we just ready to sleep, ready to eat whatever offered, because we just go there to get something very, very precious than what is the place you sleep.
Correct.
But people, I know that some people, you know, people coming from different cultures and different backgrounds, so they keep on kind of arguing with the coordinator. And I was just, you know, it's just, the sounds are coming to my head and I was thinking, no, Mahesha, you know, you don't have to take those, you know, focus on what you came for.
Correct.
You don't have to cry for others, let the others figure it out. You live with what you get. And you came to achieve something, you're going to focus on that. So I pretty much managed to make up my mind after the first day, keeping all those things behind. But the real world is such. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Like, we can't, you know, I can't make everyone to think in the same way, but that is what's happening. So the lesson from Dhamma is, you and Lukaswami Nansi always saying, you watch your mind, what's happening outside, it's not your problem. So at the end, my conclusion is that, you know, the world is world and people are people. And even at Nisaranavane, even at Vyayaha, it is superior thing, inferior thing, this and that, all matters. So, and that's why people keep asking, like, oh, where you came from? Actually, one person asked from me, where you are? Then I said, right now I'm on the bed, because I was on the bed at that time that the question was asked. So the person wanted to check where I came from and then asked, where are you? She didn't ask, where are you from? She said, where are you? And then I said, right now I'm on the bed. Then I think she got annoyed and she said, like that she said. And then I was thinking, oh, it's a nice word. Anyway, I heard it before. And I was thinking, oh, just forget about the word. It's just a sound. And I tried to protect my mind and then reply. And I just kept quiet. And then thereafter, they didn't talk with me at all. And that's a good gift for me, because noble silence is a must in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so things like that. But then I wrap up thinking, okay, it's a great place. Right. The people who are coming is different. So that's the only thing.
Yeah, that's a lesson also from us. So when you are going to a retreat or wherever, so you can't expect the perfect behavior from everyone. So people are coming with different mindsets. So are we able to cope up with them? So that is one type of lesson that we can learn. And on the other hand, say to a question with respect to the lay people, so typical Western attitude is that everybody has to give the equal rights and human rights have to be met, this and that, all are accepted. And on the other hand, but from the Buddhist point of view, so we have a kind of a different way of looking at things. Say the elders are typically helping us, guiding us, giving us a good example. So this is a typical Buddhist atmosphere that we are talking. So therefore the youngers are very much like taught to respect the elders, are taught to respect the teachers, taught to respect the parents. So likewise, so that's the typical proper culture that the Buddhism is encouraging, where the elders are giving a good example. They are also teaching the youngers. They are giving protection to the youngers. So likewise, the parents and teachers and elders are doing their job, their role. And on the other hand, the youngers, so they have their due respect to the others. So that's the point. And therefore,
If we consider the Buddhist order, the monks' order, so that hierarchy is maintained, as you mentioned, the upasampada, the number of vassa, number of high ordination, how many years that one have been in the sasana, is one particular feature taken in front, even more than the one's attainment. Say, for example, one can be an arahant, but a young person. But the elder monk could be one with no such attainment at all, but with lot of vassa, maybe 20 vassa, but no attainments at all. But still, he has lived the sasana for 20 years. So this young arahant are supposed to respect that elder monk who is with the sasana for a long time. So this is how Buddha put it to the terms. You can be an arahant, but still you have to pay respect to the elder monk. This in a way giving a kind of a hierarchy, because otherwise you can't maintain a system. You can't maintain the order, the sangha order, discipline. So therefore the Vinaya discipline is well explained by the Buddha. Certain rules and regulations are laid forth by the Buddha. So then only you are adhered to such a discipline, because otherwise everybody simply behave the way they want, and they can come up with their own ideas, and ultimately everything will break up and everything becomes scattered. So what happened is, during the Buddha's time, various incidents have happened. Accordingly, Buddha has laid down various Vinaya rules. All are supposed to adhere by that. So that is what happened in the first Sangha Council. Buddha has given some flexibility. If necessary, in the future, if you like, you want, you can change certain rules. But at the first Sangha Council, arahants who participated there, they decided, okay, rather than changing the rules, giving the flexibility to change rules, let's adhere to them. So that's the decision they have taken at the first Sangha Council. So therefore, hierarchy then that sense is maintained. But on the other hand, the senior monk, on the other hand, has to understand all these are conventional. That's also the Dhamma part. You are supposed to follow the Vinaya, the discipline. But on the other hand, through your mind, you need to understand this is a mere rule, this is a mere convention. I don't need to take it so serious. For example, say you are now with, say for an example, a monk with 20 vassa being respected by another 10 vassa monk or 5 vassa monk or young monk, whoever, might feel that I am a senior person, a senior monk, I am the boss. I am the owner, I am the controller, they all should listen to me and they all should behave the way I want, so I am the commanding officer, something like that. So then he's going wrong. There may be certain tasks that you may be assigned, you may have to play a role model, you have to give a good example, but at the same time you have to be quite realistic, because these are mere conventions. And that is for you, that is for one's own understanding. Even though you are playing your role at the monastery, or you are playing role at the, say, at a particular occasion, particular incident, but once you come to the typical terms, you should understand I am just a human being, or everybody are equal, I have to respect others as well, I have to listen to others' opinions as well. And all these hierarchical terms are mere conventions. They are not taking to anything to my, say for example, understanding. But how to cope up and how to respect the conventions are one thing. But conventions are conventions. So likewise, understanding both sides are necessary. So the conventions are to be respected for the well-being of the society, to the well-being of the community. And on the other hand, you have to understand the conventions are merely conventions. I don't need to take them so serious either.
Yes, it's very clear, Bhante.
Yeah.
Discipline is very important. That's why actually the number of, you know, sanghas, dhamma sanghayanas were there in the history.
Yes, yes.
And I heard about like Buddha himself actually have been a rules for sangha separately, 227, isn't it?
Yeah, 227 for monks. Yes,
so it's a seal, isn't it?
Correct.
So anyway, it's good. Otherwise, we won't be able to, you know, bring and keep the Dhamma in a such a safe manner.
Exactly.
Unless we do have disciplines.
Correct. Yeah.
The point is actually, as well as in Sangha disciplines, the lay people also have the rules, structure, law, and disciplines, and then also these hierarchies. And things that we always have to respect. So that's how the society is made up.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yes.
All right, then. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Dhanavan Sannai. Okay, then. We have spent a fair amount of time today. I hope now we can wind up the session. So since I am here alone at Asatta Monastery, so the other participants are absent today. All the merits what we have accrued through this Dhamma discussion and teaching, so let's share with all the celestial beings, our past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, Nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.